Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Real excited about today's show. One thing about me personally, I'm a play-by-play junkie. And we've had a few great play-by-play announcers join us. We've had Vern Lundquist. We've had Marty Brenneman, who just wrapped up his incredible historical career as play-by-play guy for the Cincinnati Reds. So I love getting the play-by-play announcers on. It's something I'm very passionate about. And today, we're going to be joined by Craig Bowler-Jack, longtime play-by-play announcer for the Utah Jazz. He's been holding down that position on TV for 15 years since Hot Rod Hundley decided to walk away. I'm looking forward to it. Craig Bowler-Jack has a fascinating career as far as his work in the NBA, what he's done in the NFL and with college football. And he was also getting set to call that Utah Jazz-Oklahoma City Thunder game when the NBA decided, nope, we're pulling the plug. The league, it's currently suspended. That in itself is going to be a unique story. Also, if you listen to the show enough, you know that I'm highly biased towards Kobe Bryant. Craig Bowler-Jack was behind the mic as the Utah Jazz played Kobe Bryant in his final game in the NBA, where Kobe scored 60 on the Jazz. Bowler-Jack was there for the call. So I think we're going to have a phenomenal conversation. Really looking forward to talking with Craig Bowler-Jack, and that's coming up here in just a bit on Drive Time Sports. Also today, we'll give you the local sports recap. Yesterday, we were joined by Coach Bob Evans, new head coach of the USU Eastern men's basketball team. Coach Evans had his introductory press conference at the BDAC yesterday, and then he took out the time to join us on Drive Time Sports. If you missed that interview, we'll play you some clips of that during the local sports recap. And also, as far as the local sports are concerned, we'll continue our season review. Today we'll focus on the Emory Lady Spartan volleyball team. That's coming up in just a bit. Let's take a look at the national sports headlines, and we will begin in the NBA / college ranks. What was it, about 2 weeks ago, we talked about Jalen Green, where he was going to bypass college basketball and go straight into the G League pathway program that the NBA has put together. He's not the only one. Five-star point guard Dacian Nix has reportedly made a change of plans. He is not going to go to the Pac-12 and play for UCLA. Instead, he's heading to the G League's pathway program. Green was a top recruit, top 15, according to several different outlets that rank high school athletes, top 15 player in the 2020 class. So he's going to join Jalen Green and also Isaiah Todd in what's become really a viable alternative for those who want to bypass college and go straight to the NBA, specifically for high-end prospects who just don't want to go to college. Now, here's where it's different with Nix. He had originally signed a letter of intent to play at UCLA. That's different than, say, Green or Todd. So Nix has already gone on a different path. But CBS previously reported that he was going to go to UCLA back in August, played his high school ball in Las Vegas. And again, he already signed with UCLA. That's where it's so different. Highest rated recruit in the UCLA recruiting class, which was rated number 42 before he left. So UCLA is definitely going to be hurting. But Dacian Nix is going to bypass his college career and go straight to the G League pathway program. This G League initiative, if you're unaware of it, it comes where NBA, at a time when NBA and the NBA Players Association, they failed to meet on terms that would reduce the league's age minimum from 19 to 18. And I know that this is a hot topic. If you love college basketball, you can look at this a variety of different ways. There are some that would say the one-and-done angle is not good for college basketball, but I think going back to before the league put this 19-year-old age limit in, people would say that college basketball was struggling a little bit because some of its biggest stars were bypassing the college game. We never got to see Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Kevin Garnett, Jermaine O'Neal, just to name a few. You didn't get to see these guys play college basketball. That's not why this was put in. All right, the age limit was put in because there was an abnormally high number of kids declaring for the NBA that simply weren't ready. I can't remember off the top of my head what draft class it was, but there was one year there was 53 kids that had declared. 53 high school kids that had declared for the NBA draft. Well, there's only 30 teams, so it's not possible for all 53 of those kids to be selected, which means they are then ineligible to go to the NCAA. And so there's been some negotiations on how the league could work, maybe with the NCAA. But this right here, it's an alternative. And I think it's one that may just work because the G League pathway is going to give kids an opportunity where they can earn six figures. And these kids will be under the watchful eye of the NBA and the franchise affiliates. So they can have firsthand information on prospects as opposed to the exhaustion, right, of going through colleges. And I think at the end of the day, this benefits the NBA because it will improve the G League product. You have a kid, a can't-miss prospect. Right now, we have three top 15 kids not playing college basketball. Already, the attention on the G League is going to be a little bit higher than it was beforehand, right? I mean, how much G League basketball do you really watch? I'll be honest with you, I don't watch a ton. I watch very little of it. I watch way more WNBA basketball than I do G League basketball because I'm a WNBA fan. And as far as the G League is concerned, I rarely pay attention to it. You know, every now and then you'll hear about a prospect that's really catching someone's eye. You pay attention to him. Maybe you go back, you look at his stats because you know he's going to get a call up with his franchise. That's about it. I don't pay a lot of attention to the G League. And I love the game of basketball. I'll be paying attention to the G League this next year if we get a season. I promise. I think you will too. I think it does improve the product in the G League, and I think that's important. This is a great pathway for the NBA. I don't know how the NCAA feels about it, but I think it'll work for the NBA. Let's move on and over to the NFL. The Baltimore Ravens have agreed to a deal with free agent DJ Fluker. This was confirmed earlier today. Baltimore reaches a deal less than 2 days after he was released by the Seahawks. Now, it is contingent on him passing a physical, which has been a sticking point for several free agents during this offseason. But the NFL Network was the first to report this deal. Fluker's only 29 years old. He did play 14 games last season at guard. And I guess that's probably the biggest question mark right now for the Baltimore Ravens. Marshall Yanda retired this offseason after 8 Pro Bowls, right? So, yeah, the Ravens definitely need help. Low risk, very high reward deal right here. The competition for Fluker is going to include Ben Powers, who was a 4th round selection a year ago, and then 2 draft picks this year, Tyree Phillips, and then a 4th rounder, Ben Bredesen. That's who Baltimore went with in the draft. With no in-person spring workouts, adding a veteran lineman, I guess, is just it's insurance for Baltimore. And I think you're going to see several more teams go down this route. As I mentioned, low risk, high reward for the Baltimore Ravens, one of the most dynamic offensive teams already, who added some running back help to go with Marcus Ingram out of the backfield. It seems like it's a no-brainer for the Ravens to add DJ Fluker. That is now official. Let's talk Major League Baseball for a moment. This has been a sticking point on social media. If you haven't paid attention, people who purchase tickets to go to Major League Baseball games were not allowed refunds. That's not the case anymore. Major League Baseball is now allowing teams to offer refunds to fans for games that are not being played, currently not being played, because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Games originally were considered postponed instead of canceled, and so teams could hold on to that revenue. This is why it changes drastically. There's no chance Major League Baseball is going to play a 162-game season now. There is no chance that this is going to happen. And so now the league is allowing refunds. MLB is not requiring refunds, and each team can set its own policy, and I would assume that many would offer a credit for maybe 2021 as an option, but teams will be announcing their new policy as early as tomorrow. So again, this means that we will not get a condensed 162-game season. I believe it was, 144, if memory serves me correct, the last time we had a strike in Major League Baseball. So we're going to get a condensed season. We know that. I just want to get a season. I don't care if it's 80 games. I don't care if it's 60. I just want to get a season. I want to play baseball. I want to see baseball being played. I don't even care if I go to a game, which I go to Major League Baseball games every year, but I really just want to watch baseball right now. I really have the itch for it. That's some of the news coming out of the national sports front. Again, coming up on the show today, we're going to be joined by Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer Craig Bowlerjack. In fact, he'll join us when we return right here on Drive Time Sports, plus the local sports segment coming up on 107.3 FM and 750 AM live from the Auto Farm Studios.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Extremely excited to bring in our next guest. Longtime play-by-play announcer for the Utah Jazz, entering year 15 behind the microphone for the TV broadcast. He is Craig Bowlerjack, and he's joining us right now over the phone. Craig, it's a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you so much for taking out the time.
Absolutely. Jordan, hope you're well, staying safe, and the rest of your listeners, and let's just hope soon we'll be back doing what we love doing, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's so unique. First off, you've been in broadcasting for so long. Could you ever have possibly even imagined that we would have this type of setting? I mean, going over the whole course of the NBA season, it's just been one thing after another. It's been surreal, to say the least.
Oh, Jordan, my goodness. You know, if someone would have said world pandemic, I would say let's hope not. But I never thought it would impact so many around the world, but also impact industries, you know, our daily lives, but also take out professional sports as we know it. To answer, no, this shocked me. This was, you know, a night in Oklahoma City back on, and I'll never forget this, March 11th, when this game, and I knew something was up. We knew that Rudy was being tested, but I didn't really comprehend the impact of it all until they walked off the floor. And I got back to the locker room, and we were ushered into that side room and told us that Rudy was positive and stay here. And that's where we stayed for 6+ hours until we were able to be tested. So we went through quite an experience together, the team plus the broadcast crew. And it's a night I'll never forget. But I think more or less, not just on a personal basis, but just the impact it's had and continues to have on the world of sports, but most importantly, the health of every individual we know around the globe. So I just hope that something miraculous happens and that the curve bends downward and we can hopefully get back to doing what we love.
Yeah, I'm sure this is the longest you've gone without announcing a game or calling a game in years.
Oh, you know what? It's funny you say that because my wife was just in here, and she was so happy that I was going to be doing a radio show because it keeps me out of her hair. You know, and that really is something. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and I have a passion, and I love what I do. I think also it's kind of told me that I'm not ready to retire ever. I love to work, and I like to be around people, and I like the unknown of, as you know, play-by-play, you can prepare, but you never know really how a game, the outcome of a game will end at the end of the game or when the horn sounds. So, yeah, for me, I think I've re-engaged myself to know that I'm nowhere near ending my career. I love what I do, and I think my wife will absolutely agree. Stay at it as long as you can and stay out of my hair. I'm joking, but I think we found out a lot of things, you know, about our about being quarantined, with stay at home, stay safe. We venture around on occasion, try to be as safe as we can, but it's been a challenge and difficult because, Jordan, you know, I tell you, we're on this roller coaster throughout the course of a year, and, you know, it has its highs and lows, and it speeds up and slows down, but through the course of nearly 100 games, when you do preseason and regular and hopefully a round or so of playoffs, you know, you kind of know when the roller coaster or the train's going to come to a stop, but I didn't expect it just to hit the brakes so suddenly on that night in Oklahoma City. And all of a sudden, as you were preparing for a stretch run into the playoffs, all of a sudden the brakes do hit and you have to get off. And I wasn't ready for it.
I don't know that anyone was. I mean, it really came out of the blue. And with that being said, I know it's so minuscule in the grand scheme of everything, but has there been any realistic talk about us getting a conclusion of this season? I know Jazz fans want some sort of ending. I mean, it was one of the most exciting seasons going back to the offseason. It was definitely one of the most exciting offseasons Jazz fans have had in quite some time. Has there been any talk about maybe a conclusion, at least something that you've heard on your end?
Well, the only thing that I've heard is what basically I think Adam Silver echoed a couple of weeks ago on that teleconference call when they were, you know, kicking around ideas. And one was the Las Vegas scenario where you could maybe quarantine players in one hotel and play at Thomas and Mack's in the Cox Pavilion. Now, I don't know if that will come to fruition or not. I think the players want to play. Owners would like to see the teams back on the floor because of the financial impact it's had. And I believe television, you know, and I think the fans are hungry for basketball and to see what the outcome of this season would be. I know they don't want to see an asterisk, you know, put by the 2019-2020 season, but it may end up that way, Jordan, honestly. But, you know, I think that there's smarter people than you or I that are trying to figure this out. But they also have to put the safety first factor. And I think, again, the league has always tried to, you know, make sure they're in contact with, you know, health officials, what the government officials believe is what's best. So, you know, Vegas, I think, would obviously love to have the opportunity to host the NBA playoffs. But, again, it's got to be under the right conditions. And for the players' union to agree to all that. So I wish I had a solid answer for you, but I think it's fluid. And I don't think they've given up. I think that's the one thing I can tell you. I don't believe that there's been a drop-dead date yet for the league. You know, as we run into, you know, May here in a couple of weeks, there's still time. I don't know if you can complete what would be 18 games for the Jazz in the regular season, but you could start a playoff scenario, I think, later this summer. If it comes to that and they believe it's safe for the players and the officials and the support team, the support staff that's around this team, around all the teams. But, you know, if that's the case, the Jazz would play, strangely, Oklahoma City in the first round, right? 4-5. And kind of a strange scenario if that would actually come to pass. But we'll wait and see, and we'll find out together.
Again, our guest right now is Craig Bowlerjack, longtime voice of the Utah Jazz. Craig, let's talk about the season itself. Again, I mentioned the offseason and just how entertaining it was and how exciting it was here in the state of Utah. The Jazz go out, they spend a little bit of money, they bring in Mike Conley, they bring in Bogey. I mean, all in all, it was a great offseason for this team. Was there a specific storyline that you had maybe even more fun following than some of the others throughout the season? Was there something that you were even looking forward to moving into the postseason with this team?
You know, I think it was probably seeing Mike continue to grow into his role. I think we all were a little bit surprised that it took time. And he had the injury, the hamstring injury, that kept Conley out of the lineup. And the Jazz, you know, won, what, 19 of 21. And there was a lot of talk, you know, is this going to work or not? But I think Mike was really starting to kind of find his way, you know, just before and after the All-Star break. And so I was kind of wanting to see how it was all going to play out. Joe Ingles, I think, also was beginning to understand his role, you know, off the bench, and understand, too, that just because you don't start doesn't mean you don't finish in finish games in crunch time. And that's where Quinn Snyder, when I talked to him multiple times, Jordan, I know there's a lot played on starters in this league, but really if you focus on who finishes is where the trust factor and, you know, how the Jazz were going to finish. And Joe was almost usually always on the floor. Jordan Clarkson found himself on the floor. That's another story that we can get into as well, the way that he was able to, you know, basically revive a bench after they made the trade for Dante. But, you know, Conley was the centerpiece, and I think Bogdanovich also fit in quicker than I thought. And I also was more surprised of his versatility than just as a three-point shooter. When we saw him, you know, several times at Indiana, you know, he popped threes, but he's more athletic and was able to get to the rim much more than I expected. And I think that was a huge bonus, you know, for the Jazz as well. So you had a couple all-stars on, you know, that were developing, and Gobert and Donovan, and his growth was continuing at a pretty fast pace. There were some highs and lows, but I think in your third year, you continue to see a guy growing. He's going to stub his toe along the way, but I thought we really got a good feel of what Donovan Mitchell is and what he's even going to become. But the storylines are just all there. I mean, every player has a story, and I think Jordan Clarkson, as I mentioned, was another incredible get, and the way that he fell into the Jazz lineup as a sixth man, Jordan, and was able just to hit the floor running and make such a huge impact so quickly for this team. I think it was unexpected, but much needed, by the way, for a sixth man and also some punch off the bench.
No question. And when the trade dropped, I guess it was a quiet trade deadline for the Jazz, which is out of the norm with Dennis Lindsay. But this is a move that happens, I believe, back in December, if memory serves me right. Jordan Clarkson is such an interesting guy. If you go back to his time with the Lakers as a second-round pick, he was exciting when he was in L.A. He moves over to Cleveland. It just seemed like the right time. And it seems like Dennis Lindsay's done a great job of pushing the right buttons. Look no further than the Jordan Clarkson deal.
Yeah, it was sad to see the Jazz move on with Dante, but I think it was good for both sides, and sometimes change of scenery is good for a player. They'll even say that. Dante, I think, had incredible skills, but we never got a chance to see him grow into them. He was a young kid at 18 when the Jazz rolled the dice, but then injury after injury after injury knocked him out, and he's even had struggles with the Cavs before the COVID-19 crisis when I saw him in Cleveland a week prior and had a nice chat with him, but he had another bad ankle sprain. So, sometimes you're made to play this game at a high level and sometimes you're not. And you know what? I'd like to see him get a chance to get a full 82 games in through one time in his career to really, hopefully excel at a high level. But just not against the Jazz, right? But it was sad to see him go, but I think it was good for him, and I think it was good change of pace for the Jazz, and obviously the Clarkson deal has worked out in great favor for Utah. And again, I'm just still so impressed with Clarkson's ability to fit in and also just impact the team as a scorer. And he's a constant thorn in a defense side. He kind of dribbles like Nash and never gives the ball away. I mean, once he gets it, it's going to stick with him. But he doesn't hesitate to get to the rim. And it's been a nice change of pace, I think, for the Jazz as well to get a player like that to give a different look to defenses.
Craig Bowler-Jack, again, our guest right now. Craig, you've been calling Jazz games for it's been about 15 years now, correct?
Yeah, this is year 15. It's gone by quick. You don't replace Hot Rod. You just try to... as my dad always says, plow your own field. That's an old Missouri term. And that's what I try to do. I mean, look, Hot Rod is iconic with Carl and John. I've been through a couple of these situations. Paul James at KSL during my career there before I left and went to CBS. Those aren't easy things to do, to take people's places, because you really can't, Jordan. You just do your best, and hopefully people will follow and respect, what you do.
Craig Bowler-Jack, again, our guest right now here on Drive Time Sports. Craig, I got so many more questions. I'd love to continue the conversation. However, we do have to break for a quick moment. Do you have time to hang around with us for one more segment?
Absolutely, buddy.
Fantastic. More coming up with Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer Craig Bowler-Jack when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Continuing our conversation with longtime Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer Craig Bowler-Jack. I'm going to put you on the spot here. I think this is going to be a difficult question. With everything that's going on right now with the craving for sports, we've been digging out old play-by-play broadcasts for classic broadcasts. I've been skimming through games over the last 10, 12 years that I've done here at the station. If I was to dig through Craig Bowler-Jack's classic Utah Jazz broadcast, can you give me one or two that stand out to you over the past 15 years?
Oh, my gosh, Jordan, I tell you, there's so many. I think, what I relate to is the player instead of maybe a game. And what I mean by that is calling Mehmet Okur and Money Man, and the games that he just looked over at us and blew on his fingers. And those are moments, you know, that I just remember. And Kirilenko going 5x5s. Obviously, Darren and Booz doing their thing on the pick and roll and just being so, you know, effective and unstoppable. In fact, had they stayed with the Jazz, they had a thing going, like John and Carl. I mean, the pick and roll, Booz and Darren were unstoppable. But I also learned that, sadly, you know, guys believe there's greener pastures elsewhere. And I've talked to both of them after they left Utah, how they wish they had not. It's really an amazing thing. People think you go to the big city and big things are going to happen, but in reality, what you had in the past was pretty good. So, you know, I think watching, even just a couple of years ago, watching Donovan score a rookie record of 41 against New Orleans, and I think that was the first step, Jordan, where we knew he was going to be really good. And I didn't know if he would make all-star status, but it was the first time I saw him take a game and make it his own. And I think it was obviously that night gave us a flash of what was to come. And he was able to get to the free throw line. He knocked down threes. He really led the Jazz that night. They were injured, and he just said, hey, give it to me. And I thought, this kid's not shy about being a leader. So there's all sorts of nights, you know, that I remember, and a lot of characters, by the way, that have played in a Jazz uniform. I've covered many of them. And now being in the chair for 15 years, a lot of guys have come and gone, but they always leave a kind of an imprint of a personality, you know. And you know, it's really interesting. AB was a favorite of mine, and it was tough to see him go. He was kind of a quiet guy, but we always had kind of a fun, you know, thing. AB and he liked Houdini, and you know, these names just kind of come out of the air sometimes when you see what a guy does, and the nicknames stick. Sometimes they don't, but it's just kind of the way you feel at the time. And I'll tell you a quick story. When Larry Miller was alive, the great Larry H. Miller, he came up to me one night. He goes, you know, Bowler, I'm not going to ever tell you what to do or say, but you're killing me. I said, what do you mean? You know, Larry, what do you mean? He goes, well, Memo's contract is up this year, and you keep calling him Money Man when he knocks down the threes, and this is going to be a tough negotiation. We got a laugh out of it. But the way, you know, I loved Memo because he was really one of the real guys that I've ever come across in professional sports. And, you know, you meet a lot of guys, Jordan, as you know, and some, you know, put on, you know, a false face. But Memo was the real deal. And he was great. I sat by him on the bus. And we just had great talks. And I loved the fact when he'd run by the table and blow on those fingers after knocking out a big three. But you run across characters and personalities. Sometimes you kind of connect and sometimes you don't. Some guys don't want to get involved with the media. But there's a lot of good guys on this Jazz team, and I think Jazz fans are lucky, and they know that too. There's a lot of great personalities.
No question. Now, if you had to flip that to the visitor's side of the bench, who was the most compelling player to announce when they would come into Energy Solutions? I mean, or Vivint or Energy Solutions or the Delta Center, I mean, over the course of 15 years, when you look at the players from the opposition, is there one that stands out to you?
Well, there's multiple, and I'll go through them quick. The first one that comes to mind is Yao Ming. I never knew the man was that big until he ran by the table, and I looked, and I thought, my goodness, this man is of monstrous size but agility. And that's what amazed me the most, that his calves were like my thighs, and he was still able to get a shot off and was mobile around the rim, and I was just amazed of just how big Yao Ming was. Obviously, Westbrook comes to mind, and the anger that he plays with on a nightly basis, and it's not just really against the Jazz, even though that situation that came up last year with the fans, it happens with him about every stop he makes on the NBA tour. He plays with passion, but I think really, Jordan, he plays with anger, and that anger spills over when he's on the bench and the crowd feels it. But that's what motivates him to play. I would think also a guy named Steph Curry has just awed me throughout his career of his ability to get a shot off. He's knocked down several right in front of me and at the table, and I'm thinking there's no way he has that quick of a release. and in a crowd, he's able to do it time after time. And I think we've all been convinced that he may be one of the greatest, if not the greatest shooter from three ever. You know, people will debate that, but his release and his confidence is really unmatched, you know, in the current day. And we'll see what happens when he really gets back to playing with Clay, either later this year or next season. So those are just a few names that jump out. Of course, Jordan, of course, Kobe broke my heart that morning when I heard he passed away. We called his last game at the Staples Center. He knocked 60 down. And I remember just standing there after the game, and I just really took it in because I knew it was so special. It was like a movie. We're in Hollywood, right? We're in Staples Center, and I'm thinking, I better take this in. And I did. I just stood there and watched the confetti fall. And I talked to Kobe. He was very kind that day, came by, took a photo, which is unheard of. And we never do that in our business. We would never do that. But he walked over to Matt and I and said, hey, let's get a photo. And so I still have that, very special. And I don't really try to interplay with a lot of, you know, opponent, you know, teams. But that just happened to be one of those moments that had happened. And that's a moment I'll never forget. And Jack Nicholson to my left, looking at Matt and I throughout the game, and his Jack voice going, hey, boys, you know, he's going for 30. Then he looks at us, he's going for 40, 50, here's 60, and he just chuckled. I'll never forget Jack just having a grand time, three seats to my left on the front row. And I think I'll never forget that moment. We've seen some great players, some incredible athletic ability, and some personalities too, Jordan, that go with those players. And that's what really sticks out to me during my 15 years.
Again, Craig Bowlerjack, our guest right now. Craig, I have to ask you, we had Marty Brenneman on the show just a few months back. We were talking about his legendary broadcast career. His first game of the big leagues was 1974. He got to see Hank Aaron hit his record-tying 714th home run. I mean, what a way to break into the business, right? Do you remember your first game as far as a professional sporting event on the grand stage? Do you remember that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I started in Wichita, Kansas. First play-by-play I ever did, besides Kansas State football and some basketball radio when I was in school, was I got a chance to call indoor soccer. And people would be like, really? That was the first? Yeah. There was a major league MISL, major indoor soccer league team called the Wichita Wings that were really popular and a very good team. And I got a chance my last year in Wichita to call a year's worth of soccer, and it was really fascinating, very fast. They used the boards like in a hockey arena. It was really fun. And then when I came to Salt Lake, Jim Nance was here, and he and I worked together for just a mere 3 months before he went off to CBS. And I was given the play-by-play duties of BYU. And I was so excited about that opportunity because, as people remember, 84 was the national championship year, so there was so much hype around BYU and the way they were able to win a national championship. Wouldn't happen today, you know, just the way things are, the P5s have all, you know, stacked up and how it's all working out. But, Jordan, I tell you, it was fun. Lavelle was as classy coach as I could ever help, you know, or hope to work around or be around. He was great. And then, of course, the Ty Detmer era took us to another level. And I tell you, I believe those games gave me an opportunity to be seen nationally, and I got a chance to call ESPN football and basketball, and then went to CBS for 13 seasons and then Fox for four, and here I am with the Jazz. So it's been a interesting ride, and I hope there's more miles to go. You know, I mean, I've been very fortunate, but when opportunity comes, you have to work hard and you have to deliver, and that's what I try to do every night.
Now, you definitely have done a great job with it. We can end with this, because I could talk to 100 play-by-play announcers. I may get 100 different answers to this particular question. The night before a game, how does Craig Bowlerjack prepare?
Well, I prepare like I'm preparing for a test in college. I take it very seriously. I think a lot of people sometimes think you just sit down and put on headphones. Not true.
Nope.
I have a two deep for football, and I have a card. I'm looking at it right now at my desk, and I save every one so I can go back for reference. Every game I've called, I've got every press pass every game I've called, I've got in a huge bucket up here in my office. My wife wants me to to throw it out. I said, never. I just keep piling them up. But those sheets are so important because I put nuggets of information that I hope we'll all use throughout the course of a game. But as you know, every game is really just ad-lib. And so what you inhale during your preparation, you exhale it during the course of a night. And sometimes you use it all, and sometimes you use very little, because the game dictates on what actually comes out of your mouth. If it's a back-and-forth night, those are the nights you love, because those games are what fans are so engrossed in as well, when Westbrook and Mitchell are trading bucket after bucket, and all of a sudden you got yourself a tight game all the way from start to finish. Those are the ones you wait and hope for. Other nights, the Jazz bust out and open up a 15-point lead, and you start to talk about, you know, the couple of games prior, some tendencies, and you're looking at the opponent a little bit and look at its standing. Sometimes the Jazz are on the short end of the stick, and they're down 15, and you know that they just don't have it in the tank that night. But you try to keep the energy going, because there are diehard fans that are still going to stay with you, and you know that you want to give them what they came for. Others have turned off to old reruns of MASH or Gilligan's Island, right? And you know you lost them. But there's still that base that you want to make sure you do your job and do it well. And, you know, that card that I have gives me a lot of information. But like I said, it's how you prepare and what you know through the course of years in the league. And you can, it's amazing how the mind works, too, that it can throw you back to a time that you remember that plays into the current situation, the current game that you're calling. So, you know, you work closely with Big T. I work closely with Matt. We've got a great broadcast crew, and we try to, you know, coordinate what we're doing and bring the best broadcast that we can. We try to go a feel of a network broadcast every night that we hit the air. And we're, you know, I'm proud of the guys I work with. I really am.
Well, Craig, I definitely enjoyed the last 20, 25 minutes of the conversation. I really, really appreciate you making time for us today. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can follow Craig Bowlerjack. I know right now everybody is craving any little tidbit we can get of sports, and you are active on Twitter.
Yeah, I am. Not like some, obviously, but I'm at Buckle Up Bowler, and if you want to follow, please do. I try to throw in a few tidbits before and after a game, and I like to interact with fans, and I get a kick. I really wasn't into social media, Jordan, much until about 2 or 3 years ago. Then I realized just, you know, I think how important it is to stay connected and, you know, to try to put a voice out there a little bit about what we do and where the games are. People always ask, what time's the game tonight? Where can I see you guys? And so we always try to feed out that information as well. But I get a kick out of the humor and some of the incredible, you know, notes and tweets that you see out there. The passion, Jordan, is deep for sports. Not only the Jazz, but for Southern Utah and for Northern Utah and for Utah football, BYU. And the whole region. I've learned a lot from social media, and I think I see the passion of sports fans and how much they actually miss Utah Jazz basketball right now. I can just say to everybody, be safe. And let's hope we get back into this together real soon. And there's nobody more anxious than myself to bring Jazz basketball to them and to share those great moments. And hopefully there's a lot more to come.
No question. No question. Craig Bowlerjack, once again, thank you so much for the time today. It was a pleasure.
Jordan, anytime, my friend, and my best to you. Stay safe, and hopefully our paths will cross soon.
Yes, absolutely. Again, that's Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer Craig Bowlerjack taking out the time to join us here on Drive Time Sports. Different perspective. I love the play-by-play conversations. I could talk to Craig Bowlerjack for hours. It's a terrific, terrific conversation. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return live from the Auto Farm Studios on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, let's get back to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on 750 AM KOAL.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, set to close out this Tuesday edition of the show. A couple of minutes left, and we'll talk Major League Baseball. This is going to be a big emphasis on the show tomorrow. The idea of getting Major League Baseball back. And according to Bob Nightingale in the USA Today, Major League Baseball is currently discussing an idea that would put together three leagues of 10 teams. The divisions would keep many of the natural rivalries together, They'd be playing one another before an expanded playoff format. And if you're wondering about the realignment, and I'll bring in Travis Anderson for this. Travis, in the East, we get the Yankees and the Mets, the Red Sox, the Nationals, the Orioles, the Phillies, the Pirates, the Blue Jays, the Rays, and the Marlins. Again, major rivalries are kept intact. The West would be the Dodgers and Angels, Giants, A's, Padres, Diamondbacks, Rockies, Rangers, Astros, and Mariners. So with that, you're basically, what you're doing is you're basically taking divisions, right? The NL West and the AL West, and we're putting them together. Same thing could be said. Central, you get the Cubs and the White Sox, the Brewers and the Cardinals, the Royals, Reds, Indians, Twins, Braves, and Tigers. So they are really keeping a lot of these squads together that have developed those sort of rivalries, and I think that's great for the game if this is the route they have to go to get the season played.
I quite frankly don't care what route they go as long as we get baseball back.
You have to do it right.
I want baseball, so however they group these, whatever the case may be, let's get it going. Let's get baseball back.
I mean, you have to have Yankees, Red Sox. You have to have that. You have to have Dodgers, Giants.
I don't need it, but no, I'm okay with whatever we do. As long as there's baseball, I don't care.
There's a difference in Major League Baseball than there are in other professional sports, and so it has to be done right, especially when you're talking about an expanded playoff format. You have to make sure these groupings are done correctly. So the idea here, could they squeeze in 100 to 110 games? Probably. I don't know what fan attendance is going to look like. And as far as the location for this, I'm not sure. Is it still being talked about in Arizona, I believe, is where it's still being talked about being played, I believe.
I think what they said that they might have a case where there's 20 ballparks that they could use.
Okay. So it makes sense to really condense things. Now, Major League Baseball and union officials have yet to talk about the financial ramifications of playing without fans. So this is something that may be in place mid-June, which says we're still a ways away from getting baseball back, but you're starting to see things open up a little bit throughout the country. There's optimism that they could settle the differences in negotiations as far as the scales and the loss of revenue and gate receipts and parking and concessions. Teams are going to have to revise their revenue sharing plan. I mean, there's a lot still to be worked out, but it looks as if Major League Baseball has a proposal in place that may actually give us games in the middle of June. We're going to focus on this on the show tomorrow. We are out of time today. I want to thank Craig Bowlerjack for taking out the time to join us. Tomorrow we'll hit the baseball talk heavy. We will also be joined by Galen White, one of my favorite baseball authors. We're going to break down a section in his latest book, Left on Base of the Bush League. It was a phenomenal book, but there's a specific player we're going to talk about on the show tomorrow, and we'll talk about the dream scenarios for Major League Baseball and getting us some action back in the middle of June. It's going to do it for us. Be safe. We are out. NASCAR Live is coming up next.